Antarctica, our freezing neighbour 6,000 miles to the south, was first an object for adventurers to chase after, and then, years later, a potential launch pad for nuclear weapons at the forefront of the Cold War. But since the signing of the Antarctic Treaty in 1959, the continent has gone from a hotly contested battleground to a peaceful shelter for marine life. Miles Herbert looks at the success of the Antarctic Treaty system and Australia's involvement in a new kind of government.
It was often called the frozen mistress, you know, a sleeping beauty, frozen, waiting to be conquered, you know, by male adventurers who would get their claws into the flesh, so to say, of Antarctica.
That was Professor John Keane from the University of Sydney, describing the race to the South Pole, the international compulsion to colonize and conquer Antarctica in the early 1900s. This early image of Antarctica, this obsession with land, land to be laid claim to, colonized, owned, it's how we think about the land we live on today. It's how our political leaders think about government. President-elect of the United States, Donald Trump, the United Kingdom's Boris Johnson, and Australia's own, Pauline Hanson.
I will build a great, great wall on our southern border, and I will have Mexico pay for that wall.
We say we can take back control. Take back control of our borders, take back control of our economic policy, our tax, our trade, and take back control of our democracy.
Their push for globalization, economic rationalism, free trade, and ethnic diversity has seen our countries decline. This is due to foreign takeover of our land and assets.
While democracy around the world is still defined by borders and territorial ownership, Antarctica, our frozen desert neighbor to the south, is quietly defying these trends in favor of a government that doesn't look very familiar. John Keane.
Antarctica has no flag, it has no standing army, it has no police forces, it doesn't have a judiciary, it doesn't have a bureaucracy.
What allows for Antarctica to function without this traditional form of government goes back to the Cold War and the unprecedented ratification of the Antarctic Treaty by the world's biggest powers in the middle of a nuclear arms race.
The Antarctic Treaty came about in 1959. It was developed during the Cold War, so it was a very interesting period to be doing international agreements.
This is Juan Francisco Salazar, professor at University of Western Sydney, researcher and filmmaker who spent time on Antarctica.
12 countries were invited. These were Australia, New Zealand, Chile, Argentina, the US, Russia, South Africa, Japan, Norway, France, and the UK. And then slowly, step by step, other countries start signing and ratifying the treaty. And now there are 53 countries that have ratified the treaty.
At the time of signing, the treaty's primary purpose was to prevent the placement of nuclear weapons on the continent. According to Keane, not only has the treaty lasted the test of time and accomplished its goal, it did something much more significant. It set aside states' claims to land.
That treaty is still today intact, and that treaty prevents the militarization of the continent. It bans military activity. It effectively protects that continent against commercialization. And above all, what is very striking, for the first time in modern times, the Antarctic Treaty System sets aside sovereignty.
This setting aside of sovereignty, it's completely different from how states normally govern.
States like the United States of America or Britain or Germany or France think of themselves, those who govern these states, think of themselves as in charge of an apparatus that is sovereign over a particular territorial space. Antarctica is not understandable in those terms. The Antarctic Treaty of 1959 is unique. It declared that this territory is not up for grabs, that states do not have the right to occupy and control those states as their own.
Whether the treaty intended it or not, the inability of states to act the way they normally do has had a positive impact.
One of their effects is to restrain arbitrary exercises of power. So bullying, pushing and shoving of states, backed by force of arms, you know, the old sovereignty model of deciding things. You know, the United States invades Philippines, before that, Mexico, or the Russians march into eastern Ukraine. I mean, that familiar and that old sovereignty politics is something that the treaty system is designed to check and to prevent.
So post-sovereignty keeps countries from getting into fights. But you would think without a government, nothing would get done. That's not the case. The Antarctic Treaty established the Antarctic Treaty System, a far-reaching legal web with 29 consulting countries that over time has written and ratified policy intent on protecting the continent.
The most important one is the Environmental Protocol, also known as the Madrid Protocol, signed in 1991.
The Madrid Protocol? It's an airtight binding agreement that classifies Antarctica as a natural reserve devoted to peace and science. The Antarctic Treaty System also established the Ross Sea Marine Preservation in October this year, the largest marine protected area in the world.
It's one of the most biodiverse areas in the world. It's one of the most pristine oceans or marine areas in the whole world, so hence the urgency to protect it. You know, you have seals, microorganisms, a lot of underwater life, fishes, whales, penguins, all the diversity of animals that you can think of in Antarctica would be protected there.
John Keane thinks these protection agreements are telling. Would you say the Madrid Protocol and the ratification of the Ross Marine Park are victories for post-sovereign governments?
There is no doubt. And they are among the most global and the most impressive governing legal arrangements that we have.
Having been to the icy continent three times, Juan Francisco Salazar thinks the post-sovereign government evolving in Antarctica could be a model for how states and people govern themselves in the future.
Definitely Antarctica poses a challenge to the notion of sovereignty and to the notion of democracy in the ways they have been conceived and framed. In my opinion, the interesting question is not so much what Antarctica is or has been legally, but what Antarctica is becoming into and what Antarctica shows us of different ways of governing.
Although often looked over, Australia and countries around the world can look to Antarctica as a model for international cooperation.